different sports here now that I've made my little transition here. I took down some notes today. One of the things that happened this weekend, a couple of things actually, most of them to do with golf, which I love golf. I love to golf. I love watching golf on TV. They had the BMW Championship. Patrick Cantlay won that. He goes into this weekend. This is the final weekend of the PGA season, and he has the ability to be the champion of the PGA. And they have a really cool way how they do this. And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about here, because it's how they set up, how they get through, how they're ranked now. And I think that's really interesting. So I'm gonna pull that up here so we can take a look at it. And what they do, so Patrick Cantlay is going to start, he's going to start his round. He is going to be under par. And I think he's at 12 under par. I almost have it pulled up here, so just give me 1 second. And the rest of the 30 players are all the way from where he is going down by one till the last four people, so 27, 28, 29, and 30 are all like one under par. And then you start playing, and that's where you start from. So, and here it is. So as we go into next week, yeah, here's the 30 players right here. So actually, because of where they were, even though the Patrick Cantlay just won that, Scottie Scheffler is the number one seed because he has had the most points total. So he starts this tournament at 10 under par. Patrick Cantlay is at 8 under. Will Zalatoris, if he can play, he withdrew last week, but he had enough points to be able to take care of that. He's at 6. Sam Burns is at 5. Cameron Smith's at 4. Rory McIlroy's at 4. Tony Finau, Sepp Straka, Sung Jae Im are at 4. John Rahm, Scott Stallings, Justin Thomas, Cameron Young, and Matt Fitzpatrick are at 3. And Max Homa, Hideki Matsuyama, Jordan Spieth, Joaquin Niemann, Victor Hovland, and Colin Morikawa are at 2. Billy Horschel, Tom Hoag, Corey Connors, Brian Harman are at 1. And K.H. Lee, J.T. Poston, Sahith Thiega is even, Adam Scott even, and Aaron Wise. So those are your 30 people that have a chance to win the playoff championship. And they did that trying to keep people's attention. During the BMW this week, the most important thing that was done this week was the PGA. I think the PGA took a time, just like we said today, you know, you take a time, step back, look at the situation, figure out what you need to do. I think the PGA did that, okay? It's not enough just to call them, you know, liar, liar, pants on fire. We don't like LIV. And we're not going to let you guys do anything. You know, they have to have a bigger game plan than that. And while they were meeting at the BMW, your Rory McIlroy's, your Justin Thomas's, and a lot of the players, if not all 30 of them, were sitting around trying to figure out what they needed to do. And we talked about this a little bit at the fair this week. To be able, I think the way Scott and I put it was, is he ever going to win another golf tournament? Probably not. It's hard. I mean, he's going to keep rehabilitating. You can still see. I mean, his one leg is much, much smaller than the other one. And I mean, it's nowhere near ever going to be normal. Is Tiger Woods the most powerful golfer in the world? Absolutely. And I think he was getting a little nervous about how they were handling things. So he flew down to the tournament and had discussions. And I think one of the most important things that you saw come out of that the most was that Tiger and Rory McIlroy are on the same page, and not only do they want to, and this is probably wrong terminology, right? I wanted to say fend off. I don't think that's the right terminology. I think they want to make sure that LIV golfers understand that they made a bad decision. And in the long run, they're going to want to get back in the good graces, but they're going to have to do some stuff before we'll allow that to happen because of what they did and how they did it. The one thing that you got out of this little conversation that Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods had is Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods have even higher things that they want the PGA to do. They want the PGA to be in different places and play different things and use the popularity that golf has. And if you don't think it's popular, you need to see the numbers. It's popular. The amount of people that play golf in this country is unheard of right now. I didn't even think 20 years ago, even when I was watching Tiger, I still wasn't playing, but now I do. I want to play every day. I don't have the body that allows me to play golf every day or the game, but that doesn't even matter because I don't care. I want to play great, but I don't care. I like to play golf. I like to be out with my buddies. I like to play with my kids. I like to play golf. But I think Tiger and Rory have even bigger things and bringing in bigger companies and bringing in more prize money and not worrying as much about having 140 players playing every weekend. Now, that's all well and good, I think, but they understand, and I think people understand, and you have to have that ability to get into that group and out of that group and into that group. But there's a group of, I mean, even if you take the 30 that are right here that I just read through, 20 of them are guys that would be something that Rory and Tiger are looking at. Hey, every once in a while, maybe we do need to take a weekend and have all 30 of us go somewhere and play and let people interact and do that. Maybe, you know, maybe there are things that Liv is doing that is a good idea. I think there's things that the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour are doing that aren't good for the game of golf. And the one thing that you have to do, and I think Nick Faldo said this on when he was signing off because he's not doing golf anymore. He's down in Nick Faldo Farms. He's turned into a farmer with animals and all kinds of stuff, and he's excited. You don't need 35 players on the tour that no one's ever heard of. You know, they still, everybody has to have a share in the pot, but we like to see the guys we like to see. The problems that we're seeing with all of this right now is you have a person that's in charge of LIV who is not well-liked. And Greg Norman knows that. One of the things that he used to get LIV to work and to get all of this right is to sit there and goad and do those things, right, to the PGA because he knows he can. And that's what he did. And he got people to jump into there mostly on money and knowing that they don't have to play every week to get to play for that kind of money. So you don't have to play in 20 tournaments to make sure that you get to be in this end of season tournament. And I think Tiger and Rory even want to take that a little further with some, and here's the crazy thing. Cause I think this is the interesting part of that. And it's the part that has me the most intrigued. It doesn't mean that you have to take the top 30 players in all these tournaments. What it means is you want to take the top 30 players that are going to draw crowds and get TV behind you on non-golfing TV times. So if it's a Saturday, Sunday, or even if it's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday golf tournament, so you catch middle of the week one on a Friday, even if you push to Saturday, but you don't want to push to Saturday because of college football. So maybe you do a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday golf tournament with 30 of the top professionals, made for TV, interacting, not stuffy, you know, not, I was going to say wrong one, not Caddyshack. Help me. It's going to come to me. The Adam Sandler part. People like that, right? Happy Gilmore. You know, so not stuffy. So you can hear Tiger and Rory goofing around, or JT and Jordan goofing around. Or you can listen to Patrick Cantlay and Xavier Schauffele, who actually were almost paired together the whole entire weekend. They're best friends. They do everything together. And they got to play golf together and came in first and second. I think Tiger and Rory understands that on a Wednesday night in November or October, November, December, that a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you're playing somewhere nice and it's 30 of the people that are the best golfers in the world playing for money and maybe not being as serious as they normally always are, could be a big time TV thing. That's how you knock LIV down and you get those guys back into the PGA. Here's the one thing that could hold everything up, is if the PGA thinks that what they did is so egregious that they're not going to let them back in, because that's going to ruin what you've got. It's everything that you're trying to work yourself into. The to my understanding of this, to my what I want to see happen, you have to get those players back into the mold and get them back in and understanding that they want to be a part of this. But for some of them, Dustin Johnson doesn't want to be away from his family that much. Patrick Reed's Patrick Reed. There's some of these guys that, especially the European players that are playing there, it's too much. They get to play Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday, and they're done, and they can go do what they want to do. They can fly in. They know the amount of money they're getting before they go. But people still get to see them golf. Now, what LIV's biggest problem is they have nowhere for you to go watch. If you can't watch Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Bryson DeChambeau, because they said, you know, this is going to be a big week for golf after these championships, because there's 7 or 8 more people that are getting ready to jump. Maybe as much as 10. And you got to figure out how to not let them go. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM. Real sports talk for real sports fans. I'm going to try to get Randy Wehofer back on here and see if we can't talk some minor league baseball. I'll give it my best try during this break. Be right back.
Here's a look at traffic on 101.3 and
of integrity, good sportsmanship, and respect for the rules. Now as a high school official, I get to help model these same values to others. Maybe the colleges and the pros didn't call, but the kids in Iowa did. And now, I'm enjoying the competition, the camaraderie, the bands, the crowds, and all the pageantry of high school sports all over again.
Interested in becoming a licensed high school official? Go to highschoolofficials.com to learn more and begin the application process.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school, not because he's a boy, but because he's hungry? Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night, not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat? Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover, not for fun, just so we can have dinner. Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch, so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat. am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
Brewed in Des Moines. You're listening to Steen on Sports. 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody, once again. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 Champ AM. Real sports talk for real sports fans. Been out State Fair for the last couple of days. Had a great time. And now I get to see right now if we might have Randy Wayhofer. Randy, can you hear me? Randy. And it was really fun to watch because, I mean, they're playing for big bucks too. I mean, this is kind of their thing. There's 30 of them. And, you know, they played all those tournaments to get to that point. So it's exciting to see. With baseball, it's getting to the nitty gritty. And I took a long time today to take a look at baseball in general. Because I'm trying to figure out how baseball teams are set up best to win. And the teams that are struggling, what can they do? And we did a lot of talking about this out at the fair this week, just sitting around the table and watching people and talking a little baseball. This is what's good for baseball right now. Baseball's good when the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Dodgers and the St. Louis Cardinals and the New York Mets are good. It's good when the Cleveland Guardians are good. It's good when the Minnesota Twins are good. It's really good when the Tampa Bay Rays are good. It's really good when the Toronto Blue Jays are good. It's amazing when the Baltimore Orioles are good. The Baltimore Orioles have tore down and built up and tore down and built up. And this time they said, we're going to tear down and we're going to build back young, but we're going to keep our young people. And they are 63 and 58. That gets us 121 games through the season. We play 162. That means there's 41 games left. And right now, they're 5 games over .500. That's a huge deal for the Baltimore Orioles. They're probably one-third the salary that the New York Yankees have. Maybe one-tenth of the Dodgers. But the St. Louis Cardinals are playing well. The Milwaukee Brewers are playing well. The Chicago Cubs are out of it, but they've been playing better. They're 7-3 over their last 10 games. The Dodgers, even with that payroll, see, now that's the thing. So when you take a look at some of these teams, Tampa Bay, Toronto, and Baltimore can't make mistakes. They can't make mistakes with players. They draft players, they bring up. They can't make mistakes on free agents because they don't have the ability to recover as quickly as New York or Boston or Houston or the Mets that have unlimited money or the Cardinals who really spend their money wisely or the Dodgers who have unlimited money. They have people in baseball that own their teams that aren't there to make a buck. They're there to make a lot of bucks by spending a lot of bucks. Now, what hurts baseball is I don't know if Kansas City can ever do that again. I don't know if the Detroit Tigers can ever do that again. Growing up, both were very, very good and strong teams. But as a whole, so here's the difference from me watching baseball with Brian Spohr and Scott Long when I was 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, was everybody's payroll. I mean, the Yankees still had a pretty big payroll, but everybody else's payroll were pretty level. Listen, this is the same thing that we're going to be talking about because college football is getting close to diverging themselves into that, where it's a 20 group here and a 20 group there and a 20 group here. So that gets you 60. That's not even enough teams that make the whole NCAA tournament. It's going to be interesting, but let's go back. So if a team made a mistake, well, they probably thought another team was going to make a mistake too. So they're, you know, you could recover from your mistakes. The problem now is the New York Yankees, the Houston Astros to a certain extent, they like to spend money. The New York Mets for sure. The St. Louis Cardinals have always been willing. The Philadelphia Phillies are willing to spend money. I just don't think they spend their money as wisely as they should sometimes. But the Dodgers and the Pirates, or the Dodgers and the Padres, they're going to spend money. So what can the Colorado Rockies, the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Cincinnati Reds, don't give me the Cubs. The Cubs could spend as much money as anybody on here. They have an owner that has all that. The Detroit Tigers, the Kansas City Royals, the Oakland Athletics. What are they going to do? What do they have to do? To get ahead, to get the Baltimore Orioles to 63-58, still 10 games behind the New York Yankees, everything had to be perfect. Everything had to work perfectly. Everybody had to hit. Every star they brought in had to hit. And I'm talking all-star or somebody that they paid good money to. And every single one of those draft picks had to hit. Now you take the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, the Los Angeles Angels, the Houston Astros, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Padres. They can miss. The San Diego Padres can go, Fernando Tatis Jr. Yeah, I'm going to lose him for pretty much the year. But hey, he'll be back. It's 90 games, and we got a pretty solid team because we spent some money, and that's what happens. That's the only issue that I see in baseball. And it was even a bigger issue for me going into this season. What are these other teams? What can they do? Well, the Blue Jays and the Orioles hit. They hit the right players. They got the right managers. They have the right scheme. Chicago White Sox, Minnesota Twins, Cleveland Guardians, they're all in that secondary group. They're all above 500. So the things that they did, they hit. The team that kills all of this, right, is the Los Angeles Angels. Because they spend a ton of money. They have two of the biggest superstars in baseball. And they're horrible. Shohei Ohtani pitches. He throws a five-hit, two earned run game and loses. Or he has three home runs, seven RBIs, and he loses. So what happens? Well, the Angels are going to keep him because he draws fans. But he's not going to draw fans if they're 52-69. And he's going to want $100 million a year. Mike Trout, physically, mentally, may be one of the five or six greatest players of all time. But he gets hurt. He carries a huge load. It's a big burden. And they're not winning. And it just takes it away from you. You can still hit 40 home runs. You can still hit 300. You can still do all those things. But it takes baseball life out of you, and you only have a certain amount of time of baseball life. There's only a certain amount of time that you can do things that your body isn't normally wanting you to do, which baseball is a big part of that. That's why you have to be so ingenious and things that you do when you golf to be able to keep your body from breaking down. 162 games. I've always said way too long. I actually think it should be 120. I'd probably settle on 140. Then you got 70 games. You could even do it this way. You could do 50 games. So if you do 130, you do 50 games early, and then you kind of you kind of pick up your schedule and you make up those that other portion of that at a later time. Maybe you play once it gets nice out, once you know, and you could do that. You play a doubleheader once a week to make up some of those games. You cannot tell me, and I have everybody out there who thinks that football will never change again, it will. Because they were doing 14 games. They're like, man, get to 16. Whew. That's one more home game. Get to 17. That's two more home games every other year. Get to 18. I think 18 is what they're looking for. But then you have to make some changes, you know. The money you make, you have to have more players. You can't have a 70-man roster and all of that and play 18 games. You can't keep the same that you had when you were playing 14 games. There's things that have to happen in professional sports that's hard to understand because there are, well, I counted them for you. The Yankees, the Astros, the Mets, the Cardinals, the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Giants. They're all willing to spend as much money as they can to win. Now, here's the thing that they do. If it goes south, they sell off and they start over. All the rest of these teams can't do that. So there is an unfair advantage in Major League Baseball, more than there is in the National Football League. The National Football League has a hard salary cap. So the difference in the National Football League is who's got the smarter owners. Who have the... this is always my fun thing. I'm not so sure that Jerry Jones might not be the best businessman that the NFL has. But Jerry Jones wants to be Jerry Jones' owner and Jerry Jones' general manager, and if he could do it, Jerry Jones' coach, because he thinks he can do it all. Well, that works in his business, but it doesn't work in football. Or you can have individual teams that have the same type of, you know, the same type of money, but they have a very distinct way of doing things. And it can be many different ways. The New England Patriots do it different than everybody. The Baltimore Ravens do it different than everybody. The Kansas City Chiefs do it different than everybody. But they're playing with the same money. The problem is you can't go over that salary cap, but nobody yells at when they go under. That's the pure definition of a salary cap, that it has to be both, or it doesn't work. If you give owners the ability to spend $140 million and Team A is, let's see, 17 games, so I'm going to give them 13-4, and they're right at the salary cap. And Team B is 7-10, and he's going to pocket $40 million this year because he's nowhere near the salary cap. I don't think that's what the National Football League wants, needs. So that they have issues with some of these teams. And I don't know how you stop that. The Chicago Bears front office has been bad. The Minnesota Vikings front office wasn't good. And it cost them wins. It cost them players. It cost them all the extra money of getting to do things. You have teams in the NFL. It's the haves and the have-nots on who knows how to run an organization. Does that mean everybody has to be the New England Patriots? No. Nobody wants to be the New England Patriots, except for winning Super Bowls. Nobody wants to act like Bill Belichick. Nobody else gets to act like Bill Belichick. It's just a different way of doing things, but they still spend all their money, and they still hit or miss. They're just pretty good. The thing that New England is so good at is they get a lot out of a little. Really interesting how you can turn all that. You are listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM, Real Sports Talk to Real Sports Fans. One last segment. Be right back.
101.3 FM and 1700 The Champ is Des Moines' home for
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
A man who lives and breathes Iowa sports. Steen on Sports. 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody. Once again, happy Monday. Hope everybody had a good day after 11 days of the fair, getting back to a regular schedule. Here we go. Getting back from San Jose, getting a full week. See what happens. You are listening to Steen on Sports. You're listening to us on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM. Real sports talk for real sports fans. We're bringing you your news, your sports, my just off-the-cuff things for you, your way. And I enjoy doing it. You can check us out on Twitter, at Steen on Sports, at 1700 The Champ. Facebook's at 1700 The Champ as well. You can also go to 1700thechamp.com, and I will get up, now that I'm home, I will get the rest of the shows up so we are whole again and continue on from there. Okay. As always, want to thank all my sponsors, iCubs. Sorry, Randy. I will get together. We will knock this out. Des Moines Orthopedic, Northwest Bank, Woodman Controls, Heritage Building Maintenance. Who did I miss? I don't think I missed any. Northwest Bank, Heritage, DeMoss, Palmer Group, Woodman Controls. Want to say a big shout out to the Iowa State Fair again for having us out. It was a ton of fun, and it was a good time, and I have a lot of fun doing it out there, seeing people, having people stop and sit down and listen to the show live is pretty cool. I like it. So this is a really I saw this one today, and it was kind of a Hall of Fame. A Hall of Fame comparison, and I'm going to read you these, and then I'll tell you at the end who the people are. And these are three quarterbacks. You have a quarterback. His record was 165-81-1. He threw for just over 65,000 yards, had 438 touchdowns, 211 interceptions, and a 93.5 QBR rating in two Super Bowls. This next player had 57,590 yards, 373 touchdowns, 244 interceptions, an 84.1 QBR, and was 117-117 and won two Super Bowls. This quarterback, they all came at the same time. This quarterback threw for 64,401, had 424 touchdowns, 209 interceptions, a QBR of 95.2, and a record of 134-106, and no Super Bowls. Who gets into the Hall of Fame first? Do all three? Two of the three, who are you leaving out? Number one on, and not number one because he's number one, is his number one that was on there. The first quarterback was Ben Roethlisberger. The second quarterback was Eli Manning. The third quarterback was Philip Rivers. Now, I think Ben Roethlisberger is an interesting thought process because a little bit of baggage, missed some games, not the most likable fella in the world, unless you were Pittsburgh Steelers fans, Jamie Gipple. Two Super Bowls were main reasons of those two Super Bowls, I think. I think you could give him that kind of credit. The interesting is between the other two, Eli Manning and Philip Rivers. And all in all, Eli Manning did. The simple fact that Eli Manning won two Super Bowls probably gets him into the Hall of Fame. Because his overall record was 117-117. So that means there was a lot of not very good football being played in New York. But he still won two Super Bowls. And he won two Super Bowls against the New England Patriots. Think about that. Tom would be out of fingers if it wouldn't have been for Eli Manning. And then Phillip Rivers is a tough one because his yards were comparable to Ben, touchdowns comparable, less interceptions, better QBR, about the same record. Not as good, but not as bad, but no Super Bowls. I don't know if Phillip Rivers makes it into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'm not so sure Eli Manning deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But those two Super Bowls are huge. I just thought that was neat because you could take a look at that and go, Ben's problem is not on the football field. Ben's problem was off the football field. Eli's was on the football field, and Phillip Rivers just doesn't have Super Bowls. So it is very interesting to see what is going to happen. These were bets on BetMGM on touchdowns, over-under. Justin Herbert, 36.5. Tom Brady, 35.5. Josh Allen, 35.5. Patrick Mahomes, 34.5. Aaron Rodgers, 31.5. At 31.5, I'm taking Aaron Rodgers, even though, see, people don't think he has anybody to throw to, but he's going to throw to somebody, and he's going to have more than 31 touchdowns. I think the next great bet would be Mahomes and Allen. I think Tom Brady might have the toughest time because I don't know how much time he's going to have to throw. That is going to be crazy. Zach Martin is an offensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys. This is a crazy, crazy stat. Zach Martin has made it to 7 Pro Bowls. I think he's in his eighth season. Maybe his ninth season. Maybe he's starting his ninth season. This is for Travis, his Dallas Cowboy thing. He's made it to 7 Pro Bowls. He's had 6 years of his career that he hasn't had a holding penalty. He's been to 7 Pro Bowls. In his career, he has 6 holding penalties. Think about that. And that is the person they run behind. You get 8 holding calls a game, and he's had 6 in his whole career. I thought that was fantastic. Another little football trinket. Larry Fitzgerald, for some rhyme or reason, interceptions or whatever, has 41 tackles in his NFL career. Larry Fitzgerald in his NFL career has dropped 29 passes that were thrown to him. Only 29. That is another crazy one. Iowa State Fair on Saturday, 128,298 people went through the turnstiles. That was a best ever. Thought that was pretty interesting. And a couple more just little potpourris here, and then I'm do a little bit more high school football, but we're going to do more of that as the week goes along as well. I don't know if you saw today, but the Davenport team that is representing the Midwest in the Little League World Series, it is the last inning. They've got runners on second and third. They're up 1. And the Davenport pitcher throws the pitch. His catcher frames it. The batter did what a batter should do. If he didn't hear anything, he's running down to first base because he thinks it's a ball. It was definitely a strike. And all the kids are just standing there staring at the home plate umpire and in amazement of what just happened. They should be walking off the field celebrating, but he didn't call the strike. So coach, doing a great job, comes out, and he's trying to calm them down. And one of the kids, This is funny. One of the kids shouts at him as he's coming out. ESPN's trying to decide who plays these games. They're trying to fix the Little League World Series. That was hilarious. I thought that was funny. I know his mom and dad are probably going to be mad at him, but I'm not saying that he was wrong because it was a good pitch. Okay, so we talked about all these baseball teams. This will be my last one, I think. Here's in order who the bet market thinks is going to win the World Series. The Dodgers are plus 325. That's not a bad bet. The Astros are plus 400. The Yankees are plus 450. The Mets are plus 500. Those aren't bad. Now, here's where you can get into how good do you think the Cards are going to be? They're playing really well. How good do you think the Padres could be? How good do you think the Blue Jays could be? And how good do you think the Braves are? Because that's plus 1,200, plus 1,700, plus 1,800, and plus 2,500. That's an interesting bet there. $100, $1,700, come on. $2,500 for the Cards who are playing really well right now? I don't know. Sounds like a pretty good bet. But those do sound like the best 8 teams. You have been listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here in 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM. Real sports talk for real sports fans. I'll be back in here tomorrow. See you then.